Professor Allen's Comics Reading Journal for the month of August, 2021. Welcome to episode 75 of this podcast series, aka Work From Home Journal number 18, or maybe just normal old Summer From Home Journal. So maybe we're starting to get back to normal. The concept of the show is to just have a brief chat about what comics I've read since the last time we had one of these brief chats, which should make this pretty much, almost, all the comics I read during August. These books are listed weekly in blog posts at eyesandearsblog.blogspot.com, and I regularly repost them on my Facebook and Twitter, so you can find those. But those posts are not exactly spoilers for this podcast, since those are just lists. And here, there's a little more review, a little more critique, a little more discussion. But first, a little feedback. We heard from Sir Martin of Gray. I love how regularly your shows pop up in my feed. And once again, I'm aghast at the sheer number of books you read in a month, even with being on a break from the day job. Well, I think, Mart, it is fair to say that that will be changing. As school has started up again, new responsibilities, new classes, new textbooks, new teaching formats, a lot of moving parts at work. I don't know if that means these episodes will be shorter. They might be on average, but certainly the volume, the sheer number of comics that I read will certainly be on a at least slight decline. Martin said he really enjoyed the focus on Westerns month. What was it with all these grown men going by kid? It's like a 19th century Legion of Superheroes, but with more cutout trouser bottoms. Straight Arrow sounds interesting. Given he made no attempt to change his skin tone, I imagine the local Native Americans were simply indulging him because he was vaguely useful to them. That is an excellent point, my friend, and my headcanon now is that they were just indulging the white guy in his naive self-delusion. And then Martin ends with this excellent comment, Oh, Professor, pick me. I can explain Wagon Train to you. It's Star Trek, just not in space. Oh, of course, Martin. That is why I love our listeners and feedbackers. They point out many story aspects that I miss, many references that I miss, and many joke opportunities that I miss. Chris Lydon asked if that last episode was more of a roundup of what I read during July. Why, you old owl hoot, I see what you did there. And Sir Luke Giaconetti wrote in as well, Professor, just listened to the July Comics Reading Journal, and as always, I remain dutifully impressed by the amount of comics you consume in a given month. Well, see the above comment to Martin, Luke. Like you, I read quite a bit of Westerns in July for the inaugural hashtag Western Comics Month. I do not have many single issues of Westerns, so I leaned heavily on collections, Hoopla, and the public domain. Some of my favorites for the month included Showcase 76 and Batlash No. 1, as reprinted in the Showcase Presents Batlash collection. One of the other DC Cowboys, Bartholomew Lash, is about as different from Jonah Hex as could be imagined while still fitting in that genre. A different sort of Western. These tales are almost satirical in their depiction of the West, while Lash himself falls somewhere between a dude-it-up dandy and a cold-blooded killer. Two series from Charlton, Cheyenne Kid and Kid Montana. Also, see the above comment from Martin. Both series had pretty decent characterization for Charlton, and both seemed to experiment with the format. Some issues had a series of 6 to 8 page features, while others featured one longer title feature and a backup. Personally, I prefer the longer format stories, which struck me as closer to what Marvel or DC was doing, more so than the more old-fashioned anthologies. Cheyenne Kid 10 stood out to me as a retelling of The Little Bighorn, featuring the kid, with a cover by Steve Ditko and interior art by Al Williamson. Wow. You know, Luke, I gotta write that one down for next July. Western Team Up number 1 from Marvel, a one-shot featuring Rawhide Kid teaming up with the debuting Dakota Kid. It is believed that this was supposed to be an actual series, but Marvel pulled the plug after a single issue. And finally, as a counterpoint to your Gene Autry books, Professor, Gabby Hayes Western from Fawcett, an oversized Western/comedy title with plenty of laughs and hijinks, featuring the legendary character actor and Western sidekick. I had never read many Western comics before this month, Luke continues, despite being a fan of Western film, TV, and books. So this was a welcome excuse to shed some light on the genre. I cannot take credit for suggesting reading Westerns in July, as I recall that it sprung out of a conversation between several parties on Twitter. But I am glad that I had the chance to participate and look forward to doing so again next year. See you around these parts next time, Podner, Sir Luke of the Upstate. And thank you, Ol' Hoss. And a note to listeners, after the promo break, in about 10, 15 minutes or so, we're going to talk more about those genre-based Twitter conversations and where they went for August. Billy D. from Magazines and Monsters also sent in his thoughts. Hey, Prof. Listened in on a sleepy drive to work. Sounds like you had a very busy July. Western Comics Month looked like a big hit, and thanks go out to Luke and everyone else who participated, as it was a lot of fun to see the material floating around in my Twitter feed. Take care. Thank you, Bill. Appreciate that. And our listeners of the year, Darren and Ruth, reported that they had fun listening in on the episode, and Darren sent in these thoughts. I laughed out loud when you said, Berserker! They should hire you to do the trailer. New career time. You know, that is an interesting thought, you guys. I know there is a lower publication requirement in the VO world, but I don't think they offer tenured employment, so I'm going to stick with the job I have for now, but thanks for that encouragement. Nice gift of Sword of the Swashbucklers from Laurel. I read that when it was originally released, loved it, and picked up the revival during a recent Kickstarter campaign. I was a big fan of many Now comics back in the day and read their Green Hornet series regularly. Great memories. I got another laugh at your negative score for a CGC comment. I like beautifully cared for comics, but reading is most important. So I'm glad you have your priorities straight. Trust me, if Darren thinks you have your priorities straight, you probably have your priorities straight. Thank you, friend. You talked about so many great Western comics. I enjoyed following along with all the social media posts during the month, and hearing your reviews was terrific. And I loved your shout-out to Paul Hicks regarding Tremors. That combination can never be mentioned too many times. I also had fun hearing you compare the Blake and Mortimer adventures to Professor Challenger. I love those Arthur Conan Doyle books and really appreciated the reference. Thanks for the fun listen, and take care, my friend, Darren. No, Darren, you take care, my friend. Social media support for that last episode came from Billy D, Moscow Vincent, Kirk Spencer, Big Five Army, Manuel from Buy Indie Comics Day, Ed Moore from Teal Productions, Karen from Between the Pages, Robert Ludwig, the most sane man among us, Clinton from Fan Film Fridays, Gene from The Hammer Strikes, the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Network, Dave's Comic Heroes Blog, Derek W.C., from The History of Comics on Film, Spy Vinyl, Drew from Comics for Fun and Profit, and our reigning Listeners of the Year, the aforementioned Sutherlands, from the Rad Adventures Network. Appreciate all that support. And now, on to books that I read last month, and as we do on the show, I categorize or classify those books. And first are the books that I read for podcast appearances, the homework books. And for the upcoming Quarterbin 173, I read the 10 issues that Mrs. Quarterbin and I picked up at Free Comic Book Day, courtesy of World's Greatest Comics and Crazy Comics. Those books were Archie, DC Young Adult Graphic Novels, Enter the House of Slaughter, Investigators, King Shark, Lady Mechanica, Star Wars Adventures, Teen Titans, and World of Zorro. And for the next episode of Doomspeak, we are indeed heading back to the future. So I read Doom 2099, 19 through 21. And comics I read for listening to podcasts. And these are getting to be a pretty good number because DC Infinite app. I have always loved following along with comic book podcasts whenever I have the chance, and the app certainly gives more opportunities to have that chance. And thank you, DC-themed podcasters. So, to listen along with episode 103 of the Legion Clubhouse, I read Superboy and the Legion of Superheroes, and then the title that followed, which was just Legion of Superheroes, 259, otherwise known as one of the early conundrums of this young comic book fan's organizing life. To listen along with Billy and Herman on their podcast, A World of Fire, episodes 15 and 16, I read All-Star Squadron, 21 through 24, which includes the team getting their new HQ at the World's Fair Perisphere, and a dramatic adventure with the classic Golden Age villain, the Ultra-Humanite. And to listen along with Tim Price, the Podcrasher, on his new Outcasters show that he does with Ashford, episodes 15 and 16, I read Batman and the Outsiders 14 and 15, a very seasonal story in which Maxi Zeus takes over the 1984 Summer Olympics in Los Angeles. And on the new comics that we read, I used to say right off the shelf. Now I can say right off the digital shelves of Hoopla. And we do have a couple of Boom books, because they release on Hoopla either the day of, sometimes it's delayed by a week or two, but pretty close to when the physical book comes out. So I read Something is Killing the Children, 18 and 19. We continue with the origin story of our protagonist, Erica, who in this one is sent out to a farm in the sticks to work on her monster hunting skills and to confront some memories of her past. It's an excellent story in a cool world. I hear there is a House of Slaughter comic coming at some point as a spinoff to this series. And at this point, wherever this story goes, wherever this world takes me, I am going with it. And another series whose books show up on Hoopla around the time of physical release. And I did get caught up on this one, so it is kind of cheating to put them all here. But I read The Many Deaths of Layla Starr, 1 through 4, written by Ram V. The gist of it is that the death goddess is relieved of her duties because in the near future, a particular fellow is going to invent eternal life. and the Eternal Corporation really is not going to have any need for her services in the future. So she gets put into the body of a human, Layla Starr, to live out the rest of her now mortal life. But strange things happen, as often occurs when competing god and goddesses get involved in each other's affairs. There's a lot of interesting stuff happening in here, including Layla, spoilers, but this is what the book is called, dying just about every issue. The bureaucracy of the omnipotent powers is pretty funny, and that this takes place on the Asian continent with a different pantheon than we're used to reading in Western comics, all of that is good. No idea whatsoever where this is heading, but so far I am enjoying the journey. And on to general comic reading that I did. And this one is a reference of sorts to a new comic series that I've been reading. From Crazy Comics, for a buck, I read Berserker number 1, a black and white comic from Gauntlet Comics from 1993. And this one had all of its vowels in the title. So that does differentiate it from the other one. But other than that, these are pretty similar. This guy had a big mohawk, though. I mean, it was the 1990s, so of course he had a big mohawk. In early July, I was very excited for my friend Laurel Mountainflower, who posted some exciting selections from the first quarter bin that she had been to since before COVID. And then, ain't she sweet, a few days later, I got a care package from her made up of some of those very quarter books, including a whole bunch from CrossGen, including Meridian number 1, and I liked this fantasy world. It was a first issue that was intriguing, a lead female character who also was intriguing, and maybe the one that, I'll use the word again, intrigued me enough that I would pay attention to if I found more of these for cheap. Sigil number 1, the sigils are important aspects of this shared world, so having a book titled that makes sense. This one also did some interesting world building. Sojourn 21 and 22, which was more of a fantasy-style comic, sort of in the D&D mode, a mythic quest led by a team of misfits, very enjoyable, and this one was a very pretty book. And Soulless 1 and 2, a book with a legitimate epic sweep, a being with godlike powers is chased by others of her kind, and her powers are scattered to many worlds. So her mission is to track down the sigil bearers, each of which can restore a bit of her missing powers and missing memories. A good setup. It's not original necessarily, but it really works. And for a distinctly serialized storytelling medium like comic books, this could work. And in these issues, it does work. There was a lot of interesting stuff happening in these cross-gen books, and they definitely put money into their efforts. Creators on these books included Barbara Kiesel, Ron Mars, George Perez, Greg Land, Chuck Dixon, Scott Beatty, Steve Epting. And the paper quality was solid. The color reproduction was excellent. All that to say that it must have been tough for them to make money with all of those expenses. I wonder if they got the artistic talent in exchange for, like, character rights, that sort of thing, maybe lower page rates. I mean, in retrospect, there's no way that they could really last a long, long time as a publisher. They did go bankrupt within, what was it, a year, 2 years? But at least from these issues, they were pretty top-notch quality books. And from the care package I got recently from Manuel Carmona from Truthful Comics and the nonprofit effort Comics for Christmas, I read Marvel Double Shot number 4 of 4 from 2003. This was an issue that wrapped up two separate storylines, a pretty straightforward Iron Man, one with a very emotional ending, actually. A high-tech competitor and colleague of Tony who has, well, he seems to have lost his mind. And the ending is actually quite a dark outgrowth of that. The other half of the issue was a cartoony Doctor Strange story, and since it was a somewhat cartoony story, Michael T. Gilbert's art more or less worked for it. Not a bad little story about an imp, a genie, and a lamp type of tale. Kirk Spencer, aka Big Five Army, sent some comics in recently, including a very strange one from an impressive creative team. RoboCop vs. Terminator, number 2 of 4, by Frank Miller and Walt Simonson. It was RoboCop. It was the Terminator. And they are most definitely versus each other. So that worked. It was crazy and action-packed. I can't honestly say I loved it, but I can honestly say it was not boring. And from World's Greatest Comics and their various sales weeks, these books cost me anywhere from 75 cents all the way down to one cool dime. Bushido, number 1, a book I was going to set aside until next year for hashtag Global Comics Month, because I made the assumption that this manga-looking book that takes place in Japan was actually a manga book from Japan. But this Eternity Comics title seemed to be written by Westerners, so I read it. The story is about how the atom bomb radiation gave a small cadre of Japanese children strange new powers. And yes, that is a strange and troublesome premise, but it's the start of potentially an interesting story. Marvel feature number 7, starring Red Sonja. In this one, the She-Devil with a sword has been employed to secure a specific ancient document. But a certain Cimmerian also wants the artifact, so we get some solid Conan on Sonja fights. A true battle of the barbarians. Much drama. Deadpool's Secret Wars. I have found that for my tastes, Deadpool is best consumed in small doses. Like many poisons. Small doses spread apart by many months. This one inserted Deadpool into the original Secret War story, and then in a backup, in Contest of Champions. So fun. The humor worked. I enjoyed it. And now I can probably go to pretty much the end of the year before I read another Deadpool story. All-Pro Sports Comics number 8, which covered the life and career of Evander Holyfield up to his becoming heavyweight champ, but not including the Mike Tyson ear-biting. That, I guess, would be next issue. I've read sports biography comics before, and they all tend to be a little dull, but this one was very dull. From Now Comics, Racer X 1 and 2, part of the Speed Racer world. In this version, Racer X is, well, a racer, a competitor of Speed's, but he's also a secret agent working for GAS, the Global Arms Security Organization, meaning that he gets his assignments from his supervisors at the GAS station. That is the best gag in the book, but there was some fun to be had. I preferred issue 1 to 2, where Racer X had to stop an assassin while driving in a road race because one of the other drivers was the assassin. Not bad, not bad at all. And like I've said a lot the last few months, these Now comics continue to strike me as consistently solid. And the Bat number 1 from Adventure Comics, this is a version of a 1930 stage play by Mary Roberts Reinhardt that is considered one of Bob Kane's inspirations for developing Batman. It's not a bad story about an heiress and her fortune, some dead bodies, and maybe a mysterious character in a batsuit. Fun read. And from creator Evan Dorkin from Slave Labor Graphics, I read Pirate Corps Special Number 1 from 1989. I met Evan Dorkin at Heroes Con a number of years back, and he was a delightful fella, although he was embarrassed by the book that I brought him to sign from very early in his career. And this one also fits that category, and has all the wild and weird black and white independent nuttiness that you'd expect from black and white indie books of that era. This was a sci-fi take on the funny animal genre, more like a funny alien book, and space pirates, so kind of strange. And some kids' books that I read mostly from Sir Rob's care package, and also some from Pulp Reality or Hoopla. I read Bugs Bunny 127 and 159, Sad Sack 180 and 222, Archie 198, 338, 348, 396, and 587, The Three Stooges Slaptastic Special, and Astro Nuts, and Everything's Archie 33 and 82. The Stooges books were ones I got from an American Mythology Humble Bundle last year sometime. I went for the lowest tier, no surprise, something like a buck for 6 or 8 digital books. These are pretty good, although I don't have much experience with the Stooges other than general pop culture osmosis. I like the Slaptastic Special a little bit more, as it contained a reprint of a Stooges comic story from about 70 years ago. And Archie 587 deserves a shout-out, as it was the first part of a series of stories from about 15 years ago now that reimagined the Archie gang as students just entering Riverdale High. So this is subtitled Freshman Year, and starts late in the summer, where it appears that Jughead might be moving away, and that everybody is concerned about who the new principal at Riverdale High might be. Just as long as it's not the guy who ran their last school, Mr. Weatherby. Oh, the irony. But a pretty fun read. All right, time to take a break here, and when we come back, we'll talk about graphic novels, trade paperbacks, and long runs that I read during July.
In a world where the internet is filled with podcasts of people saying, jingles, it's no agenda.
If you wake up with the blues, trying to fill your day with news, there's one thing you must remember, no agenda in the morning.
For a healthy, balanced news diet, try noagendashow.com.
In the morning.
And other satellite monitoring systems.
And systems. Special secret satellite systems, moon bases.
Caliphate!
I'm Joe Biden, and thank you for taking the time to listen.
Adios, mofo.
The best podcast in the universe.
Dvorak.org/NA.
And we're back to talk about trades, long runs, and miniseries that I read last month, and seasonal reading. And I have a confession to make. Last time, when we did hashtag Western Comics Month, I mentioned that the next themed month was going to be Halloween horror in October, except that, well, as Luke got at in the feedback section, about a dozen of us twits were conversing come the end of July and what other genres and months were out there that we could match up. And as the year rolls on, I will warn you that 11 of the months were assigned a comic book genre, often based on the calendar, a related national day, or an important birthday. So stay tuned every month to hear related segments. But as you may know, there are 12 months in a year, and someone, I don't remember who, suggested that there was in fact one comic creator who could pretty much count as a genre unto himself. And seeing that he was born on August 28th, 1917, it was decided that August would be hashtag Jack Kirby Month. That was decided late in July / early August, so it took me a while to assemble issues, but I think a solid collection here. And so, in approximate alphabetical order, here are my readings for hashtag Jack Kirby Month. From the public domain, and the great thing is that a lot of these non-heroic genres are all over the public domain. I started with Alarming Tales 1 through 4 from Harvey Comics from the mid-1950s. Kirby and Joe Simon produced most of the work in the first two issues and then less and less as the series went by. These were all pretty solid, not quite horror tales, more like the sci-fi stories you'd see on Twilight Zone. Captain Victory and the Galactic Rangers Special Number 1 from 1983 from Pacific, which I picked up for a buck from Comic Town. I've covered a good amount of these on the quarter bin and then here, so I grabbed this one with much joy and anticipation. This one puts the captain and his crew in a space take on the Three Musketeers. And as crazy as that sounds, and as crazy as that in fact was, it was also an absolute blast. And towards the end, it was an astounding two-page space collage. Obviously, not everything that Kirby was doing at this point in his career was magical. But there are definitely moments of magic in this series. And, of course, from the Black and White Essential, Fantastic Four 21 through 27 and Annual 2. Some great stories in here, including a two-part Hulk versus Thing throwdown, which was a blast to see, especially in the Black and White. And the story with Namor and his attempt to woo / steal Sue Storm, that was a heck of a read, too. But it's hard to beat what may well be my favorite comic book story of all time, The Origin of Doctor Doom, in what may well be my favorite comic book issue of all time, FF Annual 2, which might as well be called Doctor Doom Annual 1, as it revolves totally and completely around him as well it should. Yes, there were some low moments in these early FF issues. Let me just say, the infant terrible. But overall, even in the stories that don't feature the good leader of Latveria, overall, these are solid, solid comic book stories. And in the episode that appeared in this podcast feed right before this one, I reposted a conversation I had back in 2013 on the Fantasticast about the majesty of FF Annual 2. So check that out. And I read the three Jack Kirby issues from the 1970s tryout book. First issue, Special 1, 5, and 6. These were Atlas, Manhunter, and the Dingbats of Danger Street. Atlas was fine. The Dingbats were, well, the Dingbats. But Manhunter really stood out to me as quite a good comic book. This is the origin of how Mark Shaw, lawyer and public defender, upholder of justice, how he takes on the mantle of the ancient line of Manhunters. Very good, and a character that has gone through many twists and turns over the year, but is still part of the DC Universe. Isn't that right, Dr. Ange? And for a Jack Kirby DC story from the 1970s, this one was comparatively mainstream. It looked wild and wacky, and had moments of Kirbiness, but also was pretty straightforward, told a standard comic book story, which is why, although changing and adapting, as that character has done over the decades, I think it's why this one has more or less withstood the test of time. and from the DC app, along with a few physical copies that Em had purchased over the years. I read the Fourth World title, The Forever People, 1 through 7. And these issues had it all. Darkseid, Beautiful Dreamer, The Anti-Life Equation, Glorious Godfrey, Desaad, The Mother Box, Sonny Sumo, The Infinity Man, High Father, Metron. All the nuttiness that you would expect from 1970s DC Kirby. It is all there. And a whole lot of it is just fun. Weird, but weirdly fun. And another from the public domain from the late 1940s. Comics that were about halfway written and drawn by the King. Justice Traps the Guilty, 2-4. A collection of Twilight Zone-style crime books where, spoilers, crime, it turns out, does not pay. And often does not pay in gruesome ways, but always in ways that seem appropriate. The Kirby art was dynamic and fit the crime genre very well, such as the ugly way he made the bad guys look. Realistic, but always ugly. One of Kirby's skills. And everybody tended to look ugly in their own unique and individual ways. Another skill of the King. I also wanted to give a shout out to a recent podcast appearance I made on Back to the Bins, episode 475, where I brought to the table a Spider-Man issue featuring his villain, the Sandman. And to make it a theme episode, Paul Spatero brought the Jack Kirby book from the 1970s, Sandman number 1. So that was not intended to be a hashtag Jack Kirby month episode, as far as I know. But it turned out to be, or at least to halfway be. So check that out on the Two True Freaks feed for my more detailed thoughts on that issue, along with Paul's. I looked on the DC app for the rest of that Sandman series, but I did not find it. So that was a fun month. I plan to stick with the theme genres for at least one entire circuit through the calendar. And next month, it'll be comics from the fantasy genre. So moving on, Manuel Carmona from Truthful Comics and Project New Wave sent a care package recently made up of some pretty cheap comics. And then I have to say, he sent another care package like a month later of some pretty, at least, good-conditioned comics. I think maybe he made a mistake. Sent those to the wrong place. But from both of those care packages, I read Doctor Strange, 41, 52, 65, and 75. These are from the 1970s and 80s run. Stories by Roger Stern and Chris Claremont. And at least one of these had Gene Colan art. These were all weird in their own ways, but these random issues had some plot similarities. So in reading four issues, sadly, I didn't really get four different stories, if you know what I mean. The Punisher, 60, 61, and 62, and then 73. When last we left this title, last year sometime, Frank had undergone some radical underground plastic surgery from a shaky, licensed, suspended doctor who promised that nobody would recognize Frank after her efforts, which was true because his skin and features were those of an African-American gentleman. I wasn't anticipating picking up that storyline because it worried me greatly, but here we are. Frank gets himself into a run-in with police officers. Timely. And is rescued by Luke Cage, and in exchange, Frank agrees to do some pro bono work with the hero for hire, and running off some drug punks from a neighborhood building. And they have different styles, to say the least. And fortunately, by the third issue, Frank's plastic surgery enhancements begin to fade. I mean, look, that is an insane storyline. But it wasn't nearly as problematic as I think it could have been. But again, that is fully from my perspective, so take that into account. And also, The Power of Shazam, 10 through 12 and 22. The three-part story in 10, 11, 12 was really good. featuring the whole Marvel family in Ibis and even Bullet Man on a rescue mission to save the wizard Shazam by taking down Black Adam and Blaze and Satanas. And by the whole Marvel team, I do mean including the all-time great character of Mr. Talking Tawny. I may be a fan of talking monkeys. There is no doubt about that. But that one talking cat, like I said, and I mean this, an all-time great character. And there were many old-school references in these issues, from a character named CC to streets and company names loaded with Golden and Silver Age comic creator shoutouts. It was both a love letter and also a pretty fun storyline. Very glad to have read those. From the combination of Manuel and Sir Luke Giaconetti, I read some from the X-Verse, X-Factor 56, and Annuals 6, 8, and 9. These were all from the early 90s. And there were certainly moments when that was clearly the case. Issue 56 was pretty good, with Archangel having turned more extreme in his vigilantism and those wing knives of his. Of the three annuals, none stood out as epic, as terrific, but probably Annual 6, part of the Kings of Pain event, was the most enjoyable as a standalone for someone like me, without tons of X history. Although Annual 9 featured the character Professor Power. And I'm sorry, I have a soft spot for people in my profession with mega powers. Be they heroes, or, like in this case, you know, not so much. I mentioned a while back that Robert Ludwig, the most sane man among us, sent me a couple issues of Doctor Who magazine, and he did again recently. And I read the Doctor Who Companion, the 11th Doctor, volumes 4 and 5, which are very detailed episode guides for the half-season where the Pawns finally leave the show. There were some good stories in that run, but there was also the God Complex. You win some and you lose some. But these magazines are slick and detailed and have tons of cool pictures and lots of good information. Thank you, Robert. I mentioned a few months back that I started reading some Hellboy for the first time, and from the second omnibus, I read the stories Box Full of Evil 1 and 2, Being Human, and Conqueror Worm 1 through 4. I like that this early in the character's career, we see efforts to offer a lot of characterization for Hellboy. And that does not mean that the plots are secondary or afterthoughts, but in fact those two elements, plot and characterization, blend very well in these stories. I like that Hellboy is starting to not trust his BPRD bosses and colleagues, questioning their goals, their methodology, and questioning his own place in the organization and even in the broader world. Conqueror Worm was especially good in both these areas, telling a gripping story of Nazi ghost rockets, which, yes, was as crazy as it sounds. Nazi ghost rockets. Pretty good story, too. And from Kirk Spencer, I read the trade that contained Wolverines 11 through 15, which he got for an awesome deal from Goodwill, which reminds me again that I need to spend more time there looking for comics and trade paperbacks. These were fine, written by Ray Fox and Charles Soule, occurring in the aftermath of the death of Wolverine. So some of his buddies, I guess, X-23, Mystique, and Dakin Dakin are trying to make sense of what is happening in the aftermath. Since this is a comic I'm not reading and I don't have a lot of context for it, I enjoyed the more or less standalone issue in which Deadpool decided he could take Wolverine's place. And of course, since Wolverine was in every group of heroes in the Marvel U, he applies and is turned down by all of them. Okay, so I lied earlier. I can take two Deadpool stories every 4 or 5 months. And from Hoopla, I read more from a Slice of Life series I've been reading recently, poking away at, Giant Days 45 through 48, in which our trio of English college lasses are navigating their final year at uni. And they're navigating it with varying levels of success. One of the things I like about this series is that every now and then they do a one-off, almost a downtime issue or a standalone. And this time, we had a detective story about finding the guy who'd been stealing stuff from a local comic book store. Lots of visual jokes in that one, and some pretty good just jokes as well. I'm not sure how long this series lasts, but I know it's winding down, and I'm kind of bummed that I'm going to be soon running out of issues, because I've really enjoyed this. And an Archie Reed from Hoopla, Archie Library 271, Back to School Annual, a seasonal collection celebrating, although I doubt that is exactly the right word, both from the Archie Gang's perspective and, to be honest, from my perspective, too, the start of the new school year. Like I said, that event has some meaning for me. My favorite subgenre in this collection were the stories talking about how the principal and the staff and the faculty spend their summers, including both trying to avoid their students at all costs, while also kind of missing them. And you know, to be honest, I do kind of get both of those impulses. And I think that's everything. In terms of my favorite reads of the month, Something is Killing the Children is really, really good. That reimagined Archie freshman story was solid. I really enjoyed the Racer X books, like I just said. Giant Days continues to be good. But this, my friends, for the inaugural hashtag Jack Kirby month, come on, this is a no-brainer. Not just my favorite comic of the month, but a legitimate, serious, top five favorite comic of all time. Of course, we are talking about Fantastic Four Annual number 2, best comic book of August. Hail Doom! Next month, I'm not really sure what I'm going to be reading, other than some ElfQuest and A Distant Soil for hashtag Fantasy Comics Month, and some books from that Manuel Carmona box of goodness. But other than that, who knows? But whatever I do end up reading, I will be here to talk about those books that I read in September in an episode that ought to be out sometime in early October. Feel free to let me know what you think of this episode, what you think of any of these books that I mentioned. You can send that feedback via email, relativelygeeky@gmail.com, or as a comment on the Facebook blog post for the episode. The blog is at relativelygeekypodcast.blogspot.com. You can follow the network on Twitter at relatively_geek. And, of course, the network has its own page on Facebook as well. Come join us. All are welcome. Thanks for listening, and keep the pages turning.